Welcome to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. Comment is the big conversation, the great debate, but it can only be either of those if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. The number to dial is 442086014555. You call us, we'll call you back. Establish a clear line, and remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be down at zero, or I'll have to press swiftly on because no one will understand either of us. You can also SMS the show on 44780008066, and the best of those will come up there on the comment wall. Ditto with email, the address of which is comment@presstv.co.uk. This being the 21st century, you can also tweet me at comment_PressTV. And all of that will come up there on the comment wall. Well, there was only one subject that we could have chosen today. Today, on the day that so-called Jihadi John, a grisly, brutal, foul, blood-spattered mass murderer, has been unmasked. He took great care to mask himself in all kinds of ways, but he has been revealed to be not Jihadi John, but Muhammad Emzawi, age 26, a well-to-do, well-educated West London man. He was a university graduate from Westminster University. He was, by all accounts, quite a Jack the Lad, well-dressed, well-groomed, soft-spoken, none of which would have come as any consolation when he was cutting your throat with a knife, and doing so slowly, as clerics advising them have advised these killers to do. Enjoy it, the clerics said. Cut through the neck slowly. The mass murderers of ISIL have, of course, murdered not just Western hostages, but far, far more in the way of Eastern hostages. People of other faiths, like these Christians who were murdered on the beach in Libya. People who are held to be heretic, like Yazidis, who are murdered and their wives and daughters, even mothers, stolen and used and abused in the most foul, obscene ways, bought and sold like slaves or like cattle. They have murdered Shias. They have murdered Sunnis. They have murdered Muslims, Christians, and Jews. They are the most dastardly gang of death cultists that the world has seen in the modern age. But what inspires them? Why did Muhammad Emzawi, with everything to live for, here in London, in West London, with his university degree and his good manners and bearing, how did he end up cutting people's throats in Syria? What inspired these three Bethnal Green schoolgirls to tell their parents last Tuesday that they were going out for the day? One said she was going to a wedding. The other said she was going to study. None of them gave their parents any indication that in fact they were headed for Gatwick Airport and a flight to Turkey, which they boarded with remarkable ease. Three minors, three 15-year-old girls, with no guardians with them, were allowed to waltz through Gatwick Airport, waltz on to the Turkish airline aircraft, and waltz through the Istanbul Airport, and now are in the hands of ISIL, probably married, probably being used like the other women, young and old, that ISIL have taken. What inspires people in France, in Belgium, in the Netherlands, in Germany, in Spain, where a network has just been broken up, which was recruiting 100 or more ISIL recruits? And why are girls in particular now being targeted by ISIL as recruits? And why are those girls responding in the way that they are? So that's the question for tonight. What inspires ISIL's new recruits? Let's talk to Narges Mogalegi, Press TV correspondent in London, on this very subject. Narges, welcome.
Welcome, George. Thanks for having me.
What do you think? What is it that's inspiring these people?
Well, I think it's many factors. Actually, Press TV UK's news team, so myself and two of my colleagues, spoke to two of Mohammed Emwazi's old school friends earlier today. One was in the class with his younger brother, Omar, and the other one knew Mohammed personally. And it was very interesting talking to them because they told us that Mohammed was just a normal young boy when he started high school, but that from year 9, so we're looking at about age 13 or 14, he started isolating himself, that he was showing signs of rad in his thinking. And they told us a little bit about him and his brother. They were a Kuwaiti background, but their family had moved to Iraq. Omar, his younger brother, was about 3 years younger than him and idolized and looked up to his older brother, Mohammed. And they were describing that from a very young age, both of these individuals went from young people with a good sense of humor, intelligent, charismatic, to isolating themselves. They were Mohammed, they said, was known for being dangerous. And their words were, this is a man that was grown into this. And that is what they were telling us here at the news desk at Press TV UK. So I think the other big part of the news today, which was, of course, that press conference from Cage, indicating or looking towards how the intelligence services played into this, might have missed the nuance. They didn't get it quite right because, of course, we do know that Mohammed Emwazi was being approached by the intelligence services. And as Cage said, he felt that he was being harassed. But I think it's short-sighted to just focus on that aspect of the background of the so-called Jihadi John to understand why a British Muslim or a European Muslim might become radicalized. It's a factor, it's several factors and a nuance of things. Yes, perhaps the intelligence services play a part, media coverage plays a part, Islamophobia plays a part, foreign policy of the government may play a part, but also it is important to acknowledge that there is this radicalization that goes on. And sometimes, as is the case perhaps in this instance, as described by these young people who went to school with Mohammed, it's about radicalization from a young age, and that by the time Jihadi John or Mohammed Emwazi gets to his mid-20s, it might seem normalized for him. He might have been waiting for the opportunity to go to Syria. But a lot of questions do remain, and I think when it comes to the intelligence services, those questions are there. If, as Cage said, he was somebody who had approached them for legal advice, there was a case of intelligence harassment, he was saying that he couldn't board a flight to go to Kuwait. How did he then, years later, just very easily manage to get a plane over to Syria? So there are nuances to this. There are several factors that must all be taken into consideration to understand the full picture. And, of course, many questions that still remain, George.
Was there any organizational background that you've been able to pick up on today? Was this man a member of any of these weird, cultish, takfiri organizations in London?
Well, these sources said that it was clear from a young teenage age that
which, by the way, Nargis, is long before the British intelligence services mistreated him, if indeed they did.
Yes. They said it was clear that he was and identified himself as a Salafi. But they said actually there wasn't a group of youngsters in the school that they all hung around together. They said very much that Mohammed hung around mainly with his younger brother, Ammar, that he was always debating, always quite forceful in those debates, that even in comparison to some of those young students who might be considered radical, the radicals considered him radical, there wasn't, though, a group of people that they could think of. Whether, and we'd have to be careful here, this is obviously just assuming or speculating, whether there was something at home or online he was checking something. It wasn't clear from talking to the sources. Uh-huh. But they certainly said that it wasn't that there was a group of people at school, but he certainly seemed like somebody that was pushing forward things. They said that he often led the prayers at the school, but sometimes he was quite forceful in getting people to pray. And this was obviously at a young age. You leave school when you're 16 years old. So this is many years before he might have left school, and what influences he might have had at university or beyond that. How this harassment from the intelligence services impacted him as well, that's all there to be questions. But I think the main and key point is that there's not one single thing that leads somebody to become Jihadi John. And Jihadi John is a cause and not a symptom of what we're seeing happening in the world today.
Thanks for that, Nargis. And you and I'm sure all journalists and broadcasters will continue their search for more information on the individual unmasked today as the mass killer, Jihadi John. Let me say one or two things before I go to the first caller. We have an intelligence service. It oftentimes isn't very intelligent, but its job is to keep track on people like him. I don't know what would count as harassment. It's said that they sought to recruit him. Well, I very much hope that these gangs of extremists have people within them who are monitoring them. We wouldn't have much of an intelligence service if there were not. It's vital to the vast majority of citizens in this country that we protect ourselves against potential terrorist outrage, like appears to be coming to court with ever greater regularity. It's a pity that the intelligence service didn't manage to recruit Jihadi John. There might not be so many people whose blood ran into the sand. At least it wouldn't have been at his hands if they had. All of these things are, of course, as Nargis said, a contributory factor. In no particular order of importance, here are the reasons why ISIL is recruiting people. First of all, there is a significant number of people amongst the Muslims around the world who are possessed of a vicious, cruel, sectarian, takfiri cast of mind that is easy to recruit. That further step to becoming a murderer, a killer. Every person who's ever moved in the milieu of the Muslims around the world knows that there is a small but significant section of the Muslims who hate other Muslims who don't quite have the same take on Islam as them, who hate other religions, who hate people who don't believe in religion, who hate people with lifestyles that they themselves find disgusting or unacceptable. They hate enough that if the right recruiter comes along, they could end up in Syria cutting people's heads off. That's a reason, but it's not the only reason. The Islamophobic atmosphere, deliberately generated by the media and political class in Britain, is another reason. If you pump the airwaves and the newspapers and the discourse of the nation full of foul slander against Islam and against Muslims, you're not dealing with the problem of fanaticism, you're recruiting more fanatics. It's amazing how many idiots can't quite see that. Thirdly, the fact that we have a government, a series of governments, that goes around the world either invading and occupying Muslim countries one after the other, or threatening to do so one after the other, or propping up the tyrants who torture and oppress their people, murdering them at will with weapons we gave them and with political and diplomatic support that we afford them. If you live in a country where your government gives unlimited support to the terrorist Israel to massacre Palestinians in their thousands just last summer, you'd be amazed how radicalizing that can be for some young Muslims. If you live in a country where your faith is routinely rubbished and disrespected, well, that can tend to be a bit radicalizing too. Enough from me. Let's hear from Mo on the line in the UK. Mo, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi there. Go ahead, sir.
George, again, you're distorting the facts, my friend.
Tell me.
Here, look, 99.9% of Muslims living in Europe have no time for this kind of crap. They are more concentrated on working, bringing their families up. They go to work, they pay their bills, and they're patriotic to the countries they live in, to their adopted homes. So again, you're trying to imply that there are thousands or a large percentage of Muslims who subscribe to these.
When did I say that?
You just said that in your opening remarks, there's a large number.
No, actually, I said the opposite. I mean, it's remarkable, Mo, how you can hear what you want to hear. You said I said there was a large number. In fact, I said there was a small number.
But you're trying to imply that it's a very many people.
Well, let's try and quantify it, you and I. There's 500 of them already in Syria. True or false?
Where'd you get that figure from?
From ISIL.
George, you know what Donald Trump does? He is a millionaire who pretends to be a billionaire. So he says to everyone, I'm a billionaire.
Yeah.
Yeah? This is the same with ISIL.
Well, that's true. You think they're lying? Are they lying that there's 500?
George, listen to me.
I'm listening. I'm talking with you.
Yeah, sorry. Not more than a couple of dozen idiots have gone out there.
No, that can't possibly be true because we've actually seen the names and faces of more than a couple of dozen.
Okay, hear me out. Hear me out, George.
Yeah, yeah.
The majority of the people who went there went for so-called humanitarian reasons to deliver ambulances, which were delivered to these ISIL idiots. That's, you know, for lack of a more better word. But unwittingly, they gave all the aid they took through Turkey to northern Syria. They gave it to ISIL because they thought they were helping the Syrians. And now they've sort of stopped this. Now, so let's not count those numbers as part of the ISIL brigade.
Well, of course, ISIL, look, neither you nor I knows the number. What we do know is that there are thousands of foreign takfiris fighting with ISIL. We know that ISIL exists. We're not, it's not a mirage. These heads are not being cut off virtually. They are actually murdering people on a large scale. And every person that has been one of their hostages has reported the presence of large numbers of foreign fighters. Can we agree on that?
We agree, but they don't have to necessarily be out of Europe. They're more from the region, from Saudi Arabia and Yemen.
Of course that's true. I'm not counting them. I don't regard them as foreign fighters. As I regard the Arab people as one, it follows I cannot regard a Yemeni as a foreigner in Saudi Arabia and vice versa. I'm talking about Europeans. All the hostages have reported the presence of large numbers of Europeans. Hundreds of families in Europe have reported their fears that their family members are there. I'm not sure why we're getting bogged down on this this point. I did not say that large numbers of Muslims in Britain support ISIL. The opposite is true. I said a small number do. You heard it somehow as a large number. My point is this. There are extremists in the Muslim Ummah as a whole around the world who support this kind of takfiri, sectarian, murderous insanity. Is that right or is it wrong?
That's correct. That's correct. No argument there.
Okay. Anyway, finish your point, Mo.
Okay, George, cui bono? Who benefits?
Yeah.
The only nation in that region who benefits or that benefits is Israel. If there's chaos in Syria, Lebanon, Iraq, it's only Israel that benefits. Now, what's the ultimate goal? The ultimate goal is to attack Iran. But before they attack Iran, they need to eliminate the threat from Syria, Lebanon, and Iraq, from the Shias in Iraq. Now, this is the ultimate goal that they are going for. So when there's chaos in the region, they are the only peaceful country, and they can do as they please. They can ethnically cleanse or carry out genocide policies of Palestinians and remove all Palestinians from that false state of Israel. Now, George, we cannot say there are many, many Europeans there, especially from the UK. There are a couple of dozens who have combat roles. The women who go out there, God knows what they're doing. They're stupid. They should stay here, get jobs or study or whatever. These three girls are really stupid.
Why do you think, let me ask you a question. Why do you think Mohammed Emzawi would effectively do Israel's work for it? Why?
George, it's not even established this man is the man who is Jihadi John. I don't know. I don't want to get bogged down with you to say he's the guy, because you're trying to sell something. You have a very powerful position, George. Your voice has been carried to millions of people.
So is yours.
Let's not distort the facts.
So is yours at great length.
I agree. I agree. George, let's not say this is the man. We don't know if he's the man. Maybe he is and maybe he isn't. But if he isn't, then we are condemning this man. And that's wrong, George. Let's establish for a fact it's him. And then they can do what the hell they like with him. He should be prosecuted in Syria under the Syrian legal system and jailed for the rest of his natural life if it's him.
Okay,
but
Mo,
if it's not him.
Well, I'm pretty sure that it's him. You're not so sure. We'll see in time whether it's him or not. We're discussing what motivates these ISIL recruits. But I have to go for a short news bulletin, which will last only 3 minutes. So don't go away. George Galloway, comment, the second half coming up 3 minutes from now, God willing.
Music.
without their parents or guardians, three 15-year-old girls. You would have thought somebody somewhere might have worked out, well, maybe these girls are headed for Syria, which is, of course, exactly where they now are. Probably brides already. Brides to Takfiri fanatics, like these children they hope will grow up to be. These are children alleged by ISIL to be foreign boys. It's not entirely clear, again, as Mo pointed out, what they mean by foreign, but they're very young boys and they're definitely being drilled by an ISIL militant drill instructor. I'm not so sure about the dolls that they're allegedly being given in order to learn how to cut heads off, but there's ample evidence that these people bring children with them when they're cutting people's heads off, and there's photographic evidence of them asking children to hold the severed heads up. These unfortunate Christians from Egypt were massacred like sheep just the other day on the Mediterranean coast of Libya. It's happening all over the region, now afflicted, and it's a big region, from Borno in the north of Nigeria all the way to Libya, and including, of course, the Persian Gulf, where a third of Syria and a third of Iraq is in their hands. Millions of people are living under their rule, and ghastly atrocities are being carried out by the ISIL fanatics. Some people think it's all a figment of our imagination. Some people think it's really Israel dressed up. Some people think it's Britain and America that's behind it all. I don't. Let's hear from Gary in Bonn in Germany. Gary, what do you say?
Well, I happen to be in Halifax in Canada, but anyway, on this whole question
of
radicalization.
My screen tells me you're in Bonn in Germany. So I'm insisting that you're in Bonn in Germany. Go on, Gary, my apologies.
I think ISIL has taken charge of some of the things going on behind the scenes there.
Could be.
Anyway, on the issue of radicalization, look, young people who are blocked and left with no way out, then someone comes along proposing a way out. So this seems to be almost a run-of-the-mill feature of a large number of these people who are showing up as having been recruited. Are they radicalized? In the sense that I ever understood the term, radicalization is a process of growing political awareness. But I don't think...
You can be a right-wing radical, Gary. You could be a radical fascist or a radical racist. It's not automatically a progressive or leftist thing, radicalization.
No, but historically the pattern has been that since the disappearance of the Soviet Union, a lot of people lost their bearings. And the aims of various imperial interests have tried to exploit this in various ways. But despite whatever their efforts, what's happened, what we're watching now, and what is being, I would say, mislabeled radicalization, is another generation of young people who are blocked and are being systematically destroyed by being embroiled as the foot soldiers of this whatever it is, some kind of war against civilization. It has nothing to do with Islam as the religion of Islam. It has to do with Islam mainly because mosques are places where people hang around. And people who have an evil intent and need to recruit agents of that intention, that's a convenient place to go. And of course, to sugarcoat it, You say, well, this is in the service of such and such an outlook, a so-called Islamic outlook. But it's no more Islamic than my left toe. Now, there are a lot of grisly actions that we're seeing, but, you know, these grisly, I noticed you mentioned how shocking it seems that this latest fellow who's been exposed had seemed to have come from such a highly privileged and apparently civilized family background. I would just like the listeners to be aware that this is not unique to this phenomenon of Takfirism. Here we have to watch out. I live in a country that lost 5,000 people absolutely senselessly in a raid on Dieppe in August of 1942. Why? Because a very highly placed British Viscount Mountbatten thought it would be a great way to try to convince the Russians that, yes, the West will open a second front, knowing full well that the Nazis would be waiting for the Canadians. But the Canadians weren't told, and 5,000 of them were either killed or became prisoner. So I'm not very keen about people who have highly privileged and civilized family background when they have this kind of power in their hands. But back to the main point. If we keep on calling this a process of radicalization, we're going to miss the main point, which is young people in vast numbers being blocked with no way out except this way out.
Well, he had a way out. That's the flaw in that analysis, Gary. And I'm not sure that a comparison of him and Monty quite works. And I'm not sure that of your history of Dieppe. We'll have to debate that, though, another time. Shaz is in London. On the line now. Shaz, welcome to the show.
Hi, George. Good evening.
How are you? Good evening to you, sir. Walaikum salam.
Yeah, I mean, you covered most of the points, so you can say it better than me. I don't need to say much. The only thing I would add to it, really, is that ISIL seems to recruit people who are educated and academically very bright, you know.
Yeah.
They're not recruiting people who are unemployed.
No.
Who need guidance. They're seeming to recruit people. So therefore, I would really, really urge Muslim leaders, even leaders within the community of these, the community, the ISIS, the sect of the Muslim sect, the ISIS represent people like, you know, clerics from Saudi Arabia and other Arab countries who represent their faith. But they need to come out more, and they need to condemn it openly and maybe perhaps even talk to them, dialogue with them. We need to have a leader who can openly say, this is how far you can go, and something like that. It's un-Islamic, and it's only serving the Israelis and the United States. Course.
Well, that's right. That's right. And Mo earlier didn't actually answer my point. If Israel is a great beneficiary of this savage sectarianism that has taken hold in many parts, actually, of the Arab Middle East and beyond, but let's concentrate on the Arab Middle East, why would an intelligent so-called Salafist, so-called Islamist, want to do something and contribute to something that any sensible person can see is benefiting not the Arabs or the Muslims, but benefiting the enemies of the Arabs and the Muslims? Why would an intelligent, educated person not be able to see that, Shaz? That's, I suppose, a question I'm posing.
Honestly, George, I think we as Muslims, we don't realize it. We seem to put all the blames on United States and Israel, and there's no doubt about it. Some element of it is true. But we have to accept that problem exists in our communities. We cannot stand one another. I mean, I work for the Metropolitan Police, and even there are Muslims with, you know, working with me who hate another sect, Shia sect, because there's so much misconception and there's so much hatred built in. And these are people who are born and bred in this country and work for a, you know, a public organization. But these hatred and misinformation has been placed in the, you know, given to them. And they really believe, and the things that they come out with, it's just, you know, it's not, it's so untrue, and we're not tackling it, we're ignoring it.
I mean, a man after my own heart, Shaz in London. Trolls is in Denmark. Let's hear from him. Welcome.
Thank you very much, George.
Welcome,
it's wonderful
sir.
To be back again.
Thank you. Good to hear from you. Go ahead.
I would like to say that Muslims and non-Muslims have a natural instinct to oppose the West's permanent wars taking place in Muslim countries. And but Muslims in Europe being increasingly demonized and discriminated against are, of course, open to being manipulated into joining something like ISIS, that people are desperate. To me, the wars in the Muslim countries, they reflect the West's extreme torture, genocide, murder of millions in Iraq, Afghanistan, Libya, many places, in Syria. And anybody with a natural instinct against that kind of thing would be open, if they are being demonized at the same time and discriminated against and don't have a hell of a lot of resources.
You're right, so, and it's a vortex, isn't it? It's a vicious circle.
Yes, it is. It's a spiraling polarization.
The more Islamophobic the atmosphere, the more so-called radicals will be produced, the more atrocities will occur, the more wars that will be justified. But you've made a point implicitly that I want to endorse. There's no point in listening to our political leaders, still less their media echo chambers, clucking about all this beheading and murder that's going on. Because they have murdered more than ISIL could ever dream of. George Bush and Tony Blair beheaded more people than ISIL could ever dream of. Just because we didn't see them in an orange jumpsuit, just because their killers didn't feel the warm blood on their hands as they did the decapitation, every drone attack, every cruise missile attack, every tank shell, every artillery shell, every bomb, every battleship that fired was decapitating people and murdering people on a scale hitherto undreamt of. So when you hear journalists with their sonorous and emotive commentary describe the beasts of ISIL, make this point. I'm against the beasts of ISIL as much as any person in the world. Me. But I'm not more against the beasts of ISIL than I am against the beasts of imperialism, than I am against those that murdered 500 children in the Gaza Strip last summer, many of whom were decapitated too. The difference between me and David Cameron and others is that I am against all of it, not just some of it. Ahmed is in Iran. We should hear from him. Ahmed, welcome to the show. Go ahead.
Hello, dear Jordan. Good night.
Good evening to you. Go ahead, sir.
Excuse me. The motivation for the recruitment of these young jihadists in ISIL, from my point of view, can be discussed in three major categories. Of course, it can be discussed in many other fields, but I think the most important matter is that the concept of jihad is undoubtedly a holy concept in Islam. And as a Muslim, I can tell you that jihad has its deep roots inside the religion. But the point is that I can tell you that this concept is taken as a hostage by this group or by these groups during the last decade. I can give you an example of a jihadi group that is playing its role for more than 3 or 4 decades, and nobody has ever seen such horrific actions from them, like Hezbollah in Lebanon. Even in my country, you are trying a very different type of jihad in many varieties, a scientific jihad, a political jihad, economic jihad, and many other types of jihad. So I think to prevent this from being happening in the Muslim, in Europe, in, and any other place in the world, is that the scholars and clergies in Islam play a very significant role for educating the people that jihad does not mean killing innocent people. After that, we come to an Islamophobia and a very deep harassment and humiliation of Muslims around the globe, especially in Europe, the United States. So discrimination has always had have side effects. So the side effects can be seen in these countries, in Syria, in Nigeria, in Iraq, by the actions of these Takfiri groups. And above all, is the role of imperialism, as you mentioned, as a difference between you and those who only oppose this type of terrorism.
Yeah.
And support the state terrorism of Israel.
Indeed, as I put it, Ahmed, as I put it once, and won an award as Parliamentary Debater of the Year after saying it, I'm against terrorism, whether it's carried out by a man in a turban in the Tora Bora or a man in a suit and a white shirt and tie in the White House or Whitehall. Ahmed, thanks for the call. Ali is on the line in the UK. Ali, welcome.
Good evening to you, George. Peace to you and all your listeners.
What thank you.
Awesome show, as good as always. Thank you.
Thank
very
you.
Much.
Thank you, sir. Go ahead.
I wanted to say your topic today about why people are moving to ISIS. I think this is such a. I think just as many people are moving to ISIS as there is people leaving Islam and going elsewhere. But people don't talk about. But I think these people moving to ISIL and joining ISIL is just a bad thing for humankind and a bad thing for Islam. And it comes down to, I think, lack of education.
Not with this guy that we're talking about today,
no,
Ali.
The last thing he had was a lack of education. But I think also there is a small group minority where they're actually being pushed to join them by agencies of other countries and enemies of Islam and the Middle East. But of course that would be very, very difficult, George, to prove. But it's based on what's happened in previous years and previous decades, and that's why I come to that conclusion. I think there's agencies operating for other countries that encourage these people to join in. That was certainly the case in my country, the Lebanon, where Mossad has agent cells working within the country to attract people to work towards a terrorist organization against governments and against other movements.
Ali, that's fascinating. I'd like to explore that further, but lack of time precludes it. Thanks for the call. The last caller is in Mombasa in Kenya, and his name is Hussein. Hussein, welcome to the show.
Thank you, George. Assalamu alaikum, George.
Wa alaikum salam. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, George. George, I think what inspires these people is nothing but ignorance. And what they see from the TV, we saw what Israel did on Gaza. And what they did, Israel did on Lebanon, Hezbollah in Lebanon.
it was very unfortunate. These things were there, and the Muslims saw it, and the Israelis military might against defenseless Palestinians, women and children. So these people, they show them, and then they tell them this is what these people are doing to the Muslims. But in reality, those people doing that, those the ISIL people, they are not Muslims, George. There's no place in Islam telling Muslims to kill an innocent person, let alone a Muslim, an innocent person, even a person who has no religion. There's no place in Islam which mentions that, George. So what I think it's just ignorance, and those people, they have their own ends. And what the Israelis do against the Palestinians, against the Hezbollah, the Lebanese, and elsewhere on earth. Something needs to be done, George.
Well, I'm trying my best, and thanks for that call, Hussein, in Mombasa. These people had religion. No doubt they were begging to Jesus to somehow save them from this Calvary that they were about to face. But the people who murdered them don't recognize Jesus, even though to be a Muslim you have to revere, never mind recognize, Jesus. Let me just say in conclusion this. Our rulers, the powerful, and their media deny all other contributory factors to this phenomenon. They deny that Islamophobia has anything to do with it. They deny the massacre of the Palestinians has anything to do with it. They deny the invasion and occupation of Iraq and Afghanistan and the murder of a million Muslims and more in those invasions and occupations have anything to do with it. They deny that the British and other governments' policy towards Syria in these last 4 years has anything to do with it. I spit upon their denials, but I will not remain silent when others deny the presence of this evil in our midst either. You can continue on Twitter.
Hello, just comment your name and the phone number, and just make sure that your telephone volume is set up to 0. 0. Can you spell your name for me?
Yeah, I know. You need to
write your phone number, and then we'll be back. Comment.
Can I have your telephone number?
Okay, so I'll
then
call it.